There was a tsunami recently brought about by a massive earthquake in Russia that made its way over here to where I live. I'm okay. In fact, everyone is. The tsunami was very tiny, but it got me thinking, what natural disasters normally happen in my state? You know, what natural disasters am I used to? Welcome back to the Meatweed Podcast, where today we're discussing essential safety tips for when you're actually in a realistic situation, you know, something that might actually happen. It might not. You better hope it doesn't. But it's possible, you know? We always talk about fake scenarios, you know, stuff. You know, we talk about video games a lot. Stuff that is fantasy, you know? But we never really sit down and discuss the real stuff, you know? We never talk about, hey, what happens if a electrical fire goes off? You know, something that'll affect you directly. You know, I know I sound paranoid. Don't get me wrong. It definitely shook some feathers hearing that we were going to get hit with a big tsunami. But ultimately, nothing happened. Regardless, this would not be my first time in a natural disaster. I'll get more into what natural disasters I have been in. Anyway. If you're new to the podcast because you've watched me on YouTube or YouTube Shorts now, welcome. This is the podcast I have once every 2 weeks. It used to be weekly, but now I do it once every 2 weeks, just based on the fact that it gives me more time to study something. And this week, it was actually very important to me that I discuss some natural disasters. It's been a while since we talked about something serious. And quite honestly, I feel like every now and then I need a refresher myself. And the way I refresh it is by telling you guys how to avoid stuff. First, I was hinting that I was in some natural disasters. Within my life, I can recall several, okay? Let's talk about the first one, which I had no power in whatsoever. Why? I was a baby. And when I was a baby, I forget how old, okay? It doesn't matter. My parents told me about this massive earthquake that happened in our house. In fact, my mother or father, I don't remember who, somebody had to throw themselves on top of me to avoid broken glass falling on me. I was that small that I couldn't defend myself. I was just sitting there crying, wow, shitting my pants. I feel like I would have shat my pants regardless, you know, regardless of age, if I was in an earthquake that bad. Because it made the news. It was so big, right? I mean, obviously, right? The thing is, Los Angeles specifically is very close to tectonic plates. And if you don't know what that is, Earth is made of several of these giant tectonic plates that there are faults that hit in between. It's so specific. Sorry, hang on. No, I have a sting in my mouth. Anyway, Los Angeles being close to the San Andreas Fault gets a lot of earthquakes. And let me tell you right now, they're not small. Because being that close to a tectonic plate, you're going to have earthquakes that are massive, okay? I'm talking everything's possibly going to fall off the shelves. You know, that's a big chance of happening. On top of that, there's structural damage. You know, any building you're in, you might hear a massive crack and it just starts falling apart. You never know with these things, right? And the worst part about it is LA has some big-ass fucking buildings. I don't know who built skyscrapers there, but all right. Regardless of all that, right? Earthquakes, they're unavoidable in some places, right? I mean, I feel like being close to a fault line, that's the important thing, right? The San Andreas Fault's quite famous, but it's a fault line, okay? If you don't know what that is, tectonic plates meet, and that makes a fault, right? Giant crack in the ground, basically. It will shake violently every now and then. And when it does that, it's just, you know, Earth is naturally fluid in the middle, right? So on top, we just got these giant tectonic plates, right? And if you're on top of the tectonic plates, they're huge, right? These are, they span for hundreds of miles, basically. These giant land masses, you're fine as long as you're not close to the edge of them. And unfortunately, the San Andreas Fault just happens to be where the Pacific and the North American tectonic plates meet. And there's several places that are like this, right? You can't avoid them. Tectonic plates are naturally how Earth is formed on the top, on the surface layer, right? Most of these are actually underwater because, you know, most of Earth is covered in the ocean. When those earthquakes do happen, guess what? Giant waves. However, let's say you do live by a fault line, right? Well, first off, wherever you live, if you're living near a fault line, it is pretty much unavoidable that you're going to feel an earthquake at some point in your life. And on top of that, everyone older than you, mostly in the schools, you know, anywhere you went to school, pretty much anywhere you work, a lot of places, you're going to be raised knowing the geological issues. Or, you know, the natural disasters that can occur there, right? Where I'm currently at, there's a unique place. It floods here, and I don't like it. I finally felt one not too long ago, and I'm still feeling the repercussions. But let's get back to the tectonic plate, right? First off, in the event of an earthquake, there are many ways to defend yourself, right? The first one, very easy. We're going to say the scenario is you're inside. Maybe you're working a desk job, so you're inside at your desk, right? That desk is your lifeline. If you feel an earthquake, what you do is you drop under the desk, you cover your head, and you hold on for dear life, because you're going to be shaking violently, okay? You may not shake too much, but at the same time, you want to get under something like a desk. It's very important. Or if you're asleep at night and an earthquake wakes you up, try to get under your bed. If you can't get under your bed, that's a good one. If you can't get under your bed, I don't know. Honestly, just get down low and hold on. You know, like whatever you do, cover your head. At this point, everything around you, anything elevated, anything on a shelf, may fall down. So it becomes a falling hazard, right? Make sure whatever you're near is at least light. Or better yet, if you're somewhere with a lot of... Wow, I cannot stop this burp. If you're somewhere where the earthquakes are violent, or there's earthquakes at all, don't put anything heavy up high, you know? Like, I know a lot of people nowadays have collections of stuff where they have, like, shelves up high and they have a nice thing. What the fuck am I saying? Any shelf that's higher than your head, don't fill it with heavy-ass stuff, okay? Especially if you live somewhere near a tectonic plate or a fault line, and just whatever you do, don't try to minimize the damage before it happens, you know? It's better to be safe than sorry. Another thing to do during an earthquake is to calm down. Seriously, in the event of an earthquake, you want to stay calm, because going crazy, the earth isn't going to stop for you. The earth is not going to stop, you know what I mean? Another thing you want to avoid is furniture, windows, and lamps. You want to stay away from those. Windows can crack, and guess what? Broken glass, that's the last thing you want to deal with in the event of an earthquake. A lot of people are going to get hurt. Mitigate the damage by being away from something that's, you know, like a glass panel. You know, that'll shatter. And when it shatters, it'll make a fucking mess. You don't want to be there when it all drops on you, okay? That's what they were trying to avoid when I was a kid. If you're outside, stay away from tall buildings. And more importantly, power poles. I feel like it's very important that people understand that if you're near a telephone pole line and that thing comes down, it's still active. Seriously, if let's say the floor is wet, in any place, right, where the telephone pole wires come down and you're standing in a puddle, you have just died. Very quickly, very painfully. Actually, not even quickly, slowly and painfully. It'll hurt the entire time you're dying. If there's an earthquake, get the hell away from a telephone pole. Some places you can't avoid that. So I'm telling you right now, if you're going to walk past some telephone poles, maybe do it a bit quickly. Especially if you live in an active earthquake zone, you know what I mean? And if you're driving while there's an earthquake, hit the brakes and stop. Probably way easier to do when you're like the only one on the road. But knowing that LA traffic, it's got to be a nightmare, you know what I mean? I've never driven while in an earthquake, but I know that your car rocks back and forth violently. And, the inside of that car is the safest place to be, actually. All you gotta do is stop, and you're good. If you're somewhere like an auditorium where there's a lot of people sitting down, all you can do is cover the back of your head and lean forward. The same position as if you were crashing in an airplane. That one sounds terrifying because the only thing covering you is your hands. However, keep your head safe. You know, you should be fine, okay? The thing about modern-day Earth... Why the hell did I say it that way? The thing about the modern day is that a lot of our infrastructure now takes into consideration the natural disasters that may occur wherever you're at. So, for the most part, I think LA's relatively fixed all the issues that they had back then. Because I know the first earthquakes that, when they hit LA, they were like, holy shit, what was that? You know? They even have like, if I remember correctly, some sort of counterweight. Not counterweight. They have something underneath these tall buildings that keep them from swaying too much during an earthquake. Let me look it up. Hang on. Never mind, I was right. There are large weights, often pendulum-like, that counteract building swaying motion during an earthquake by absorbing energy. That's actually kind of cool. They're designed to hold the building's weight, height, and stiffness. That is awesome, actually. I did not know that. I knew something like that was a thing, right? Obviously. Because you got all these tall-ass buildings in LA, and guess what? They never fall over in an earthquake. Now you know why. Also, most of them are pretty much just made of this flexible material. You know, steel can bend. I don't know if you knew that. Afterwards, I'm pretty sure it's mostly an issue of, like, you know, people having to look at the structure of the building, make sure everything's not fucked, basically. But that's beyond you, you know? Unless you're listening to the podcast and you happen to own, like, a skyscraper, which I doubt, but, you know, you would know more than I would at this point. I'm not an expert. Let's move on to the thing I might be well more versed in. Flooding. You know what? We'll wait for that one later, because being a California resident, I've been in my share of wildfires. There's one thing you could do in a wildfire, okay? The good thing about a wildfire is that they're not invisible, right? They don't just come out of nowhere. They start small, and they get big, and they get huge, okay? There's a video I have on YouTube, right? We were coming home, and my God, there was a massive wildfire on my left side, right? I got good footage of it. In fact, I'll make a YouTube short of it right now. It should be up by the time this podcast is out. You can see the scale of the fire, okay? I'm going to turn off my fucking voiceover in the video. The thing about a wildfire, a grass fire specifically, most of what we have out here is like dry grass, because it does tend to dry up really quickly out here. It's a hot area, okay? Not really humid, very dry. And what you'll notice is we'll have moments where we just have a lot of rain and it gets very wet and a lot of grass, a lot of foliage is allowed to grow. The problem is once that's over, that's like for a few years with just constantly greenery and greenery. It's very green, right? And then it stops and then it's given time to dry up. Unfortunately, in that drying season, any natural source of spark or any thunderbolt or just someone with a bad itch on their neck can light all of it. It's just tinder waiting to be lit. Now, a small fire starts growing rapidly, right? It's insane when you look at, like, when you're up close to a fire, when you're close enough to actually see the flames, you can see how fast it spreads. So the danger of the fire is not only the heat, but, you know, obviously it's going to burn whatever's in its path, but it's going to burn it quickly. That's what a lot of people don't realize. And another thing is, all that fire sucks in oxygen, and you won't be able to breathe when you're in that fire. It's going to choke you out, basically. You're going to suffocate in a fire. So there's a lot of steps you have to take. And the problem is, if you're in a forest fire, it's, you know, good luck. I'm sorry. If you're within one already, your chances of survival aren't that high. There's things you can do to prevent it. First off, when they say to evacuate, fucking evacuate. You have no idea how many people here every time there's an evacuation order. They're like, no, we're staying here. We're holding our ground. Okay. All right. Fine. Shockingly, I should not be giving him credit, right? Some of those people survive because what they do is they know, okay, the fire needs to eat something, right? The fire needs to latch onto something, spread out, you know, get everything wet and, you know, clear yourself. The thing is, don't do that. If you get an evacuation order, chances are that fire is so big and hot that no matter how much room you clear around your house, there's still going to be some rogue sparks that come out from that fire. That's typically how it spreads so fast. Wildfires spread about the speed of 15 miles an hour, 14 miles an hour, around there, which doesn't sound too fast, you know, compared to driving away from it. You can easily drive away from a wildfire. It's going to spread, but it's not going to spread faster than you can drive. It will, however, outrun you. Keep in mind, you might be close enough to a fire where you think you can run away from it. But the thing is, you get tired when you run, right? You need oxygen. Guess what the fire is doing? Sucking in all the oxygen. It tends to do that. Also, it chokes you out. Smoke inhalation is one of the main causes of death in a fire. Right after burning, you know, like they're hand in hand. Okay, realistically, inhaling the smoke is mostly what's going to kill you, right? You need oxygen, okay? And that fire is taking it all in. Oxidization is what'll make a fire spread faster, right? You got a lot of fresh air, a lot of oxygen. Guess what? That's going to help with the fire. By the way, I don't know if you guys know that. It's the same reason that when you have an oil fire, you cover it and it'll stop spreading because it no longer has air. You have to suffocate it. A lot of things you have to suffocate. Unless it has an oxidizer, I don't know, it's a whole thing. But basically, fire takes in air, you know, it takes in oxygen. So the best way to prepare for a wildfire is honestly get away from it. Get away from its path and you're good. Once you have done that, though, sadly, the one thing that you'll have to deal with afterwards is the emotional problems. You know, dealing with a wildfire is one thing, right? Because the fire itself is going to destroy what it's going to destroy, and then it's going to either be put out or, you know, keep spreading. Either way, eventually it turns off. The problem is whatever was behind that wall of fire. If you ever see a wildfire, you realize it's basically a wall. Like, it just keeps going in that direction, burning, and whatever's behind it, it's just smolder, ash, and the decay, you know? It's nothing. There's nothing left. And it's heartbreaking when your house was in the way. You know, houses are flammable. I don't gotta tell you that. But everything you loved is gone, basically. Which brings me to something that might not help you to stop a wildfire, but it'll definitely help you with the massive headaches. Get a fireproof, okay, seriously, I'm serious here, listen. Get a fireproof safe. Those will save a lot of headaches dealing with the aftermath of a wildfire. Put all the important documents in there, right? Passports, birth certificates, deeds to the house, social security, everything important that you have in the house, put it in a fireproof safe. I'm serious. My brother, oldest brother, right? He was actually involved in rescue after a huge wildfire hit in California. And the one thing he told us was to get a fireproof safe. Because the thing is, wherever your house was, you know, they're going to have a map of the place. They're going to be like, this house is completely gone. But guess what? All these documents are here and these people, we have records of them living here. So guess what? All of your documents are fine. Congratulations. You just saved yourself a gigantic headache. Have you ever tried to get another copy of your birth certificate? It is not easy. It's even harder when you have literally no other forms of identification. It's super hard to do. Super hard to deal with. Massive headache. Do yourself a huge favor. Get a fireproof safe. I'm not even going to specify which brand you pick. Okay? You pick. Just get a fireproof safe. I'm being dead serious, by the way. Bonus points if it's also waterproof. There are many times I've had to deal with a wildfire myself. I'm not going to lie. Being in California, you've seen them, right? Like, thankfully, a lot of the times that when they do happen, they're not close to people's houses. But the problem is, they're definitely a spectacle, don't get me wrong. But they're necessary for the ecosystem. It's hard to really pinpoint how so much beauty can come from so much chaos. Basically, the aftermath is all that ash, you know, all that dead grass, all that debris is gone. It's turned to ash. You know, ash is good for the soil. It's like when people are in a blizzard or there's a lot of snow and they say, we can't have enough snow. You know, you need snow. It's good for the earth. That's how it works, you know? That's the circle of life. It sucks to be a part of it, though. It really does suck when you have to deal with a wildfire. I've never gone through it personally where I've had to evacuate, but I've had friends who had to deal with that. And let me tell you right now, it was hard. Emotionally, right? Because you don't want to leave everything behind. It's super hard to tell people, hey, grab what you can and get out of there. You know, the evacuation order has been given, get out of there. Where it's like a lot of people would rather die than leave everything behind. And it's scary when you're in that situation, not only for you, but for them. You know, think about how they're feeling. It's like, I'm not going to abandon my house. You know, like I can't. I sympathize with that now. I mean, I did back then too, but like, I don't know, it hits different thinking about it. It's just so hard. And on top of that, you build this home for years and it all just comes crumbling down from the wrath of God, you know, in one fell swoop. And what fucking terrifies me about those fires here in California, right? I hate to say it, we have a reputation that if you're a local, you understand. Wildfires, a majority of them, right? When I've seen them, at least, they weren't caused by natural causes. I hate to say it. It's just the perfect breeding ground for arsonists. I saw a video the other day where they caught some guy trying to start a fucking fire, right? Out near San Francisco. They gathered around him and beat the shit out of him. And honestly, I'm rooting for the guys beating him up. Because it fucking sucks. It's sad. Okay, let's say, for example, you're outside. Okay, no buildings, nothing. You're literally just out in the grasslands or out in a field somewhere, and there's a wildfire. Okay, you come across it, you're caught off guard, and, you know, somehow you missed the smoke. I don't know how the fuck you did that, but regardless, you are now in a field or out in nature where there is plenty of... What's the word? Where there's plenty of foliage, right? You're out in the middle of nowhere. And all of a sudden, you do find this huge forest fire. Okay, this is from The Art of Manliness. How to survive a wildfire. Number one, keep your clothes dry. Surprisingly, in high heat, wet clothing will scald. So counterintuitive to what someone might think, you want to keep your clothes dry. Because if your clothes are wet, they'll scald your skin the moment the fire hits. And you don't want that. At least I hope you don't. Damn. Also, step two, put your shirt over your mouth and keep from inhaling large particles. You really don't want to inhale that. Seriously, everything in the air is going to be a carcinogen, basically. But also, it's going to damage your lungs. You know, it's going to damage your lungs. And the more you inhale these big particles, it's going to fuck you up more. Three, hightail. Downhill if possible, and stay low to the ground. Fire moves uphill fast because of updrafts and smoke rising. So, get down, basically. If it's starting on a hill, get down the hill. If it's at the bottom of the hill, get away from that. Oh my god, that's the worst case scenario, because at that point the fire is basically a wall going up to you. And by the way, it goes up faster. So, good luck. Consider wind direction. If it's blowing towards the fire from where you are, run into the wind. However, if it's blowing from behind the fire towards you, run perpendicular to the wind. So if the wind's blowing towards you, okay, let's say you're facing the fire and the wind is blowing at your back, blowing the fire away from you, run towards the wind. Unfortunately, this will take more stamina because you now have wind resistance. But if the wind is blowing towards you and you're looking at the fire, the problem there is that the fire is now assisted by wind. And at that point, you have to run perpendicular to the wind. Number five, avoid canyons and chutes, which can funnel deadly heat towards you as you descend. So remember earlier we mentioned the heat thing, right? Get downhill, not too far downhill. That's the problem, right? Hot air is going to go down. Really? That's actually surprising. I thought heat rose, but I guess not. All right, number six, move to an area that has already burned and is less likely to spark again if you're caught out in the open. So the best place to be in this wall of wildfire is behind it. If you can manage to get around it to where the embers, where it already burned, you're good there. That's kind of sick. That's kind of fucking obvious, right? I never would have thought of that. I guess maybe in a panic you would think about that. Okay, so now we've dealt with wildfires and earthquakes. Let's talk about one that unfortunately I have been in. Quite a few times, in fact. This one is far more common, however, far less deadly. Okay, very important that you know that this next one isn't as bad as others, but it's far more common to happen, and this is basically thunderstorms. I'm going to tell you right now, there are some bad things that can happen in a thunderstorm, right? I know a lot of you just rolled your eyes. I fucking felt that. It's how bad it is, right? It's the most common of natural disasters because it's so light. Nothing fucking happens in one, right? I've had several times where I hear an alarm go off in the TV or on my phone, and it's just severe thunderstorm warning. No one dies. No one gets hurt. Nothing happens. People get wet. You know what we see? Cool fucking lights in the sky. Regardless, what do you do, right? Let's say you're out in the field, and it's always with the field, right? Let's say you're out in the field, and there's this thunderstorm that's starting to hit, right? The only difference is, instead of seeing them off in the distance, you see them hitting maybe a few feet away. First off, if they're a few feet away, you're already fucked. I'm sorry, but that's it. There's this misconception I heard, or people always get it wrong, where you're supposed to stand under a tree during a thunderstorm. And I'm here to confirm, you are not supposed to stand under a tree during a thunderstorm. As a matter of fact, the exact opposite will happen. Not only will you be a far bigger target, trees are the most likely to be struck by lightning. So you're standing next to a target, essentially. And the funny part is, I have here, from the National Weather Services, it is... Oh my god, I'm just thinking about how many people learn the hard way about that. That's got to be the worst fucking way to go. Just an instant evaporation. What's the word? Annihilation? That one's closer. That one's closer. Oh my God. But yeah, don't ever go under a tree, you know, to stay dry. Being underneath a tree is the second leading cause of lightning casualties. Better to get wet than fried. This is from the weather.gov. So yeah, if you're in a thunderstorm, don't stand under a fucking tree. I swear to God, people always get that wrong. Including me. I was about to say the opposite. I'm glad I Googled it before this episode. That's embarrassing. I'm supposed to be the guy that teaches you not to do that shit, and I'm over here doing it. The worst part is there's not even trees out here to stand under that are that big. And then I think about this clip that went viral years ago, right? Where somebody actually got on a security camera a tree being struck by lightning. And the impact was so violent that every single inch of bark that was on the tree flew off, splintered violently. And my first thought, splintered violently. And the first thing I thought of was, that's a lot of fucking splinters. Not only that, you would be right next to it. So imagine essentially a giant electric shrapnel grenade going off right next to you. Congratulations, you were just struck by lightning. In the worst way possible, because if you survive the lightning strike, you are now completely covered in holes. You have Swiss cheesed yourself by going under the tree. So what the hell do you do in the event of lightning? Okay, this is interesting. You guys know where to go during a thunderstorm, right? Indoors. But do you know why? This is what caught me off guard. I did not know that the reason that you're supposed to go inside of a building is because lightning will strike the building and be conducted into the electrical and plumbing. How the hell did you figure that out? Like, I get it. Okay, cool. The lightning was absorbed by the building, but where in the building? You know, it's supposed to go somewhere. It goes into the metal poles. It goes into the electrical. It goes into the plumbing. That's fucking awesome. Hey, going back on that tree thing, right? Trees are not the only thing you're supposed to avoid. You're also not supposed to stand by flagpoles or any sort of tall, narrow structure, basically. These things, being higher up, will be a higher target for electricity, especially if they're isolated. For whatever reason, there's this phenomenon where if something is tall, thin, and on its own, it'll be struck by lightning more frequently. I don't know why that works. I'd look up the science behind it, but quite honestly, we're more focused on surviving the ordeal. So yeah, go into a building. And if you can't do that, go into a car. The same idea applies, right? If the car gets struck by lightning, I feel like you're worse for wear. Like, yeah, the car is gonna be fucked. I feel like you'll be fine, but at the same time, it's like I'd rather not be struck directly by lightning. Also, who's having these fuck off lightning strikes? I've never seen a lightning or thunderstorm get this badly. I've seen some shit in my day, right? Because out here where I live, they happen a lot, quite often, in fact. And we literally sit indoors and look out and see them because they look fucking gorgeous. You know, the coolest thing I've ever seen is this giant thunderbolt that just stretched across the sky, and it was pitch black outside, mind you, and for a second, the entirety of the street was lit up again. Like it was the middle of the day for a second. It was actually really cool. Kind of reminded me of that scene in Malcolm in the Middle when they have those fireworks, the illegal fireworks that they're trying to show their brother, and the last one is this fucking super titanic, really big one that literally turns the desert into the daytime for one fraction of a second, and they all go blind for 2 days. I'm really excited for the new Malcolm in the Middle. Yeah, have you guys seen the fucking King of the Hill, the new one? I love it, dude. I love it. They nailed it perfectly. And you know what? I'm gonna keep watching it. It's so hot right now. I'm sorry. If I sound distracted, I am. That's every episode. Go figure. Okay, let's talk about some lightning some more, okay? Lightning sucks. What does it do in nature anyway? Like, I could Google this, sure, but what the fuck does, like, wildfires, right? It'll get rid of dry grass. It'll burn it up, and guess what? Ash is good for the earth. It'll fertilize the soil. Earthquakes, well, this is just part of living on tectonic plates. You can't avoid that. What the hell does lightning do? You know, I feel like it's just weird. I don't know. I mean, you think of our ancestors and how they made up these stories about, like, ancient legends, you know, how they made religions on stuff like that. And honestly, I get it, because some things just happen and there's no reason for it, right? Like a great fire, you know, that would explain hell. Thunder, that would explain Zeus. Earthquakes, that would explain a god's wrath. I feel like every, like, religious ideology comes from nature, you know? Because really, that's all you could say, you know? If nature's angry, you'll feel it. it is so hot in this room. You do not know. There's a fucking bead of sweat going down my forehead because our AC is not working right now. There's a fan in this room, but I don't want to turn it on because of the microphone. You know, the thing I love about these scenarios is that you really have to have a good imagination in order to picture yourself in these scenarios, right? It sucks because there's some people that genuinely can't do that. Like, they can't put themselves in a fictional scenario. They can't picture it. There's also a study done not recently. I think it's been a while now. But that study done where it's like, ask somebody to imagine, like, an apple spinning in their head. You know, like, how well the apple is, what color it is and everything, how much detail it has. Some people can't do that. Some people literally cannot think. And it's not that they're stupid or anything. It's just they literally can't picture it in their head. I'm not sure if it's a rare phenomenon or not, but all I could think of is what nightmarish scenario that would be for somebody who's trying to, paint, write, do stuff in the creative way. Because maybe it's far more common than we thought. I don't know, but it's interesting. For those who can imagine, I love you, man. I fucking love you guys. I caved in and turned on the ceiling fan. It was too hot in here. Like, way too hot. If you guys don't know or missed out earlier, literally a few minutes ago, my AC went out. Great. Not cheap to fix. Anyway, we're going to go a little higher on natural disaster scale, okay? Because there are some things that I can honestly say that you're probably not going to ever deal with. But there are some that are more common, and I'm focusing on the most common ones, right? I think thunderstorm was the most common. Like, I don't know anyone who's never seen one. It's that common. But I can't tell you about a blizzard because I've never been in one. I've been in snow 3 times in my whole life. However, one thing I've never been in and I know all about is tornadoes. Holy shit. I know a lot about them just based on the fact that, quite honestly, I watched this guy on YouTube who only talks about it like over and over again. Hold the fuck up. This podcast was just interrupted by something. That's creepy. Hang on. Okay, I got a call from a spam caller, right? I called them back. Listen to this. That's all I'm getting. No one's talking. It's been like...
Please leave a message after the tone.
Whoops. I didn't expect a fucking concert to call me, right? Fresno. Huh. I don't know anyone from out there. That was weird. That was really weird. Like, genuinely, my phone was even like, hey, this might be a spam call. I'm like, all right, let's fuck with him real quick. And I got a concert. I want to emphasize, I was on the phone with them for 1 minute. So just 1 minute. I hope that wasn't copyrighted. I mean, if it's a scammer, it might be. Fuck, I don't know. Anyway, a lot of research on tornadoes based on the fact that I've never seen one in person, nor will I ever get the chance to, I think. More like I hope, because they could be very devastating, right? You can have a light tornado and it won't do much, right? It's a heavy wind cyclone and it'll just start tearing shit off the ground or knocking it over. But the stronger they get, the worse, right? I mean, that's the same with anything. But, you know, let's say a category, you know, one of the highest ones, Cat 5, I think. Those are the ones that just level foundations. Like, you have a house one day, and the next, it's a fucking stone slab with nothing on it. Right? That's what we're talking about. So, you're thinking, how the hell do you survive that? Well, first off, there's two scenarios in this case. One, you heard about it in time, and you're driving. Okay? You're in a car. And you know, if you keep driving straight, it's going to be a tornado. Best course of action, turn around if you know you're gonna end up driving into it and get away from it, right? Not necessarily, right? That's definitely something you should try to do. I don't know if I should say that. Look, tornadoes are fast, okay? Some of them are very slow, but a lot of them are pretty quick. There's a big difference between them, right? So maybe in a car you do stand a chance if you're on a highway, because they can go from like 1 or 2 miles an hour to 70. Big difference, right? And it's all dependent on the weather, right? The wind and how fast it's going. You know, a lot of stuff. But you don't want to be in a car when the tornado's too close, because it'll just pick you up and it'll launch you the fuck out of there. Unless it's a very light one, in which case you're good. But if it's a heavy one, a Cat 5, I don't even know if I'm doing it right. I fucking knew it. I watch this guy all the time and I forgot the scale, the EF scale. EF 0, EF 1, EF 2, EF 3, EF 4, EF 5. The higher up you go on the scale, the worse it is, right? At some point, an EF 5, which I'm pretty sure is just theoretical, is above 200 mile per hour winds, which is fucking fast. Oh my god. But imagine the force of that wind, right? Like how much damage could that wind do? And more importantly, the thing you got to watch out for in tornadoes is not only the wind, but all the debris that it picks up, right? Because obviously you're not surrounded by nothing. You're not in the middle of nowhere with nothing there at all. You're surrounded by stuff all the time. You're probably listening to this in the car, or you know, surrounded by stuff in your desk. The moment that shit just flings at you violently, you better hope that you survive. In a tornado, you just go, you hunker down in a shelter, right? Go underground. If you have a storm shelter, not a lot of people have that. That's the problem, right? Tornadoes are fucking scary, dude. It's one of those scenarios that are nightmarish, like absolutely nightmare. I used to fear them as a kid, but luckily we live in a place where they just don't happen. Until like 3 years ago when one actually touched down in LA. Scared the shit out of me, but apparently it wasn't even an EF0. Like, it was so weak that it moved a piece of sheet metal on somebody's roof or something like that. It was very small. Regardless, it was pretty damaging. The thing about tornadoes is there is no real defense. You know, you can't spray water on it, you know, to turn it off. You can't hunker down. I mean, all you could do is hunker down, right? Oh my god, that wind feels so fresh. God, I love this fan. You gotta get underground, or at least at a very structurally rigid building, right? There's a lot of places, if you live in a place where it's a bunch of tornadoes, you're gonna find a spot or two where you're gonna have a storm shelter of some kind, right? And this isn't me just being facetious, I've seen them before, right? Tornado Alley in Texas, was it? Somewhere in the south. I've been out there and I've seen them because when I was driving trucks, I thought, if there's a tornado here, what am I supposed to do? And I found a lot of them just randomly on the side of the road. It basically said storm shelter, pointed at a little building, and they go underground. And then from there, you're fine because, I mean, the main damage is something smacking into you when you're in high winds. You could survive high winds on their own. They're dangerous, but you could survive them on their own. If nothing is flying towards you, you should be fine. It's scary, sure. And you might lose your balance. Hell, it might even carry you if it's strong enough. That's the scary thing for me, right? That was the fear for me, is if a fucking tornado picked me up, like, that's it. You know, you're done. Shockingly, there have been people that survived ordeals like that. They're just weightless in the wind. And holy shit, that's a nightmare scenario. I got chills thinking about it, right? And yet, it's a reality for a lot of people living in Tornado Valley. Tornado Alley with an A. It's scary to think about that, but at the same time, you gotta be prepared. They definitely have their shit together down there, right? They wouldn't be living somewhere like that if they didn't have it already together. They know what to do, they know how to survive it. There's not often a lot of casualties with tornadoes, but there can be, depending on which ones. Like, I heard, what was it called? The Dead Man Walking Tornado. You guys gotta look that up. It's actually fucking insane. I've never, ever thought I'd see something like that in my life. I didn't see it in person, so I don't know, you know? You ever feel like you see something online and you think, I wish I was there to see it in person? Physically being at the presence of something like that would change my life forever. I think this is one of those, where the tornado, normally it's a cone shape, right? And you don't expect to see two cones appearing as human legs walking across where it's going. It's just, I like it. I like it, okay? I like tornadoes. I don't know why I was into such a big tornado kick lately. It's just, you look at these things that you've never witnessed or been a part of, and despite the fact that they're terrible, there can be beauty in chaos, and you simply wish to learn more about it, you know? Maybe feel the wind pick up once. Where I live, the heaviest wind I've ever felt is like 20 miles an hour. When I started driving over the road, I finally, for the first time in my life, felt a 60-mile-per-hour wind. It was life-changing, dude. I didn't know that the air itself could fucking push you like that. and it was even scarier that I had an 80,000-pound truck on me, but, you know, whatever. Tomato, potato, what the fuck am I saying? I'm hungry. But yeah, it's insane, you know? Like, a new experience is something that changes your perspective, at least for a little bit. In fact, for the rest of your life, it changes the trajectory or where you would have been if you didn't feel that thing. I hope you got that, because that was confusing for me too, at least a little. Turning our attention to another thing that I've always been interested in, volcanoes. Look, nothing is cooler than lava, right? You could tell someone, you know, if you have somebody who's male and you show him a T-Rex in front of an erupting volcano with thunder and rock music playing, he'll say, fuck yes. And I agree, because I am male. So volcanoes have an interesting place in my heart. First off, one, I've seen them in person. I've never been to one that was erupting, but I've been in the aftermath. I've been to the places where the volcano's lava spewed and had finally cooled down. We were able to walk on the surface. It was such an interesting phenomenon, seeing that dark rock, the little crevices, all of the unique shapes, everything about it, right? I've lived a hell of a life, you could tell. But I've never been in an active volcano eruption. And neither have you, let's face it. And if you have, I'm so sorry. This is for those who haven't, and they need to know a thing or two, you know, safety-wise. There's a lot of echo in this room now. Okay, volcano safety tips, right? Before it happens, there's a few steps here, right? This is a little guide I have. Before it happens, one, make sure your emergency kit is ready for evacuation. Fuck you standing around for? Go do it. Review the city's evacuation routes. Every single one has one, okay? Gas up your car and charge all devices. You really want your phone well charged. You're going to want to reach out after it's all done. Stay tuned into the local media and NOAA or USGS alerts. You want to stay up to date. They'll have the most recent, most up-to-date stuff. I mean, they have to, right? That's literally their job, to keep you safe. My phone did this thing and I had to cut out the audio because I got all fucking mad. Okay, here we go. They're gonna have the most up-to-date everything, right? Because it's their jobs. Cover your windows and door openings inside the house, okay? Stay indoors, seriously. Now, during a volcano, right? Here's the problem that people don't get. I'm going to say this. I'll tell you the during after. Here's what people don't understand about a volcano is that just because you're not in the way of the lava doesn't mean you're not in danger. Ash is one of the main killers, right? Lava fucking sucks. It's terrifying. The entire ordeal is basically a slap in the face for anyone living nearby. It's like, hey, congratulations. You're about to witness death incarnate. I am so fucking cringe. Like, genuinely. Anyway, I'll get into more later. Let's just go through the steps. During the active volcano, evacuate or shelter in place. Do not drive if there's too much ash fall, right? It's like fog. You also don't want to breathe the stuff in. Stay away from exclusion zones, rivers, or, you know, downwind. Good God, you don't want to go downwind. I'll give you more information on that in a bit. I really want to talk about it, but not yet. Use an N95 respirator mask and goggles if needed. N95, I believe, are the ones that we were using during COVID. Not the regular face mask, but like the more advanced ones that you should be using. Do not run the AC or heater on in your house. I think it'll attract ash to the vents. In the aftermath, stay indoors until local officials say it's safe to leave. Assess the damage done in your home. Take photos, a lot of them. Remove ashes from your roof carefully. Now, that's all of it, pretty much. We could talk now about the reason you don't want to be downwind from a volcano. There's a thing known as pyroclastic flow. It's scary. It's deadly. It's invisible. Pyroclastic flow is something that you not only not want to be in, but one that you will most likely not survive. It's something you won't even see coming, right? When you're downwind from a volcano during an eruption, there's a concentration of highly poisonous gases that come out of the volcano, and because they're dense, they go downhill. Again, none of this is visible. You can't see any of it. You can see the ash, you can see the lava, you can't see the pyroclastic flow. It's an invisible killer, and it kills the wildlife, it kills the grass, it kills anything around you, including you. You cannot survive this shit. I mean, I think you can, but good luck, you know? Serious injury or death occurs almost immediately. The scariest part to me, this phenomena specifically, right? The entirety of the volcano erupting is horrifying. But the pyroclastic flow specifically has been one of those nightmare scenarios I've only dreamed of ever being in, right? Something that you think of and you think, imagine who had to discover that. Imagine who had to look at somebody standing there downwind and they just kill over dead, not knowing what happened. They just start coughing and wheezing and then they just lay there dead, instantly dying because not only is there no oxygen, whatever there is to breathe is completely toxic, instantly killing them. You know, I'm all about clarity on this podcast, so I should probably talk about this. I was wrong. There's a 50-50 chance of death in a pyroclastic flow. I imagine having immediate medical help definitely helps somebody's chances to survive a lot higher. But it's still scary that it's a coin flip if you're in a pyroclastic flow. And what's shocking too is a lot of people, this has apparently been widely discussed. It's like, if you can outrun lava, you can't outrun the pyroclastic flow. That thing wipes out everyone in its path. You want a fucking example? Pompeii. All of the people engulfed in the ash are still there to this day. Their bodies never decayed, basically. I mean, they did, right? But their image was preserved in the ash. What do you think that was? Like, that didn't just happen randomly, right? What's crazy is they might have been caught off guard by an eruption. They'd be like, yeah, it's a volcano. It erupts every now and then. But, it hasn't erupted in a while. We should be fine. And not realizing, you know, I think of that image where the fighter jet with all the bullet holes in it, where it survived, you know? Oh, wait a minute. Forgot about that. Survivorship bias. I love that. There's, if you don't know what I'm talking about, there's an image, it's very famous, where it's a fighter jet, a really old one from World War II, covered in bullet holes, right? But you'll notice that a certain part has no bullet holes. The thing that was supposedly shown in this image is that people saw all of where the bullet holes are going through and thinking, okay, we have to reinforce those parts because they're getting shot up so much. But then in reality, it was like, no. These are the planes that survived. The ones that didn't survive didn't come back. These areas, the ones that didn't get shot, are the ones that need to be reinforced. Because if they get shot, guess what? The pilot's not even going to come back to help with the experiment. And thus, we have the survivorship bias. If you ever see an image with a bunch of random dots on it, now you know what it is. Unfortunately, it's been used in some of the worst ways I've ever seen. I don't like it. I don't like how fucking rude we're getting on the internet now. Every single website has become fucking 4chan. Like, 4chan used to be this niche part of the internet where all the crazy people went and all the secret supervillains went, and they were basically just scheming, you know? They were scheming. They had that whole Shia LaBeouf thing years ago where they were just fucking with him just because he had an art exhibit that said, "He will not divide us." And they decided, fuck you. That's it, really. And on top of that, he kept hiding this flag that said, "He will not divide us." And like, they kept replacing it, like 4chan, they kept replacing it with, I think, a MAGA hat, which is fucking crazy. It was the whole presidential thing. I know I don't talk about presidential politics, but it's just the fact that a group of 4chaners got together and were... That's smart, by the way. They used... It's fucking crazy video, right? If you've never seen it, watch Internet Historian's video on it, right? It's absolutely absurd how... They used, like, airplanes in the background to coordinate where this flag was being held. There was no landmarkers, right? There was literally stars in the night sky that they used to navigate and find the fucking flag. How impressive is that for a group of random internet sleuths? That's incredible. That's fucking awesome. How did you figure that shit out, dude? That's some shit that they did back then to discover, like, new land when out in the sea, right? You look at the stars and go, ah, we were heading north. Like, what the fuck? How did you do that? I mean, obviously he explained it in the video, right? My fucking dumbass brain couldn't comprehend it. It's just fascinating to me. Fucking awesome, in fact. I love that. I want to learn how to do that. But I have what I call dumb brain. I can understand a lot of things, but probably just surface level. A lot of people get that wrong, by the way. A lot of people have this idea where it's like, well, you're really smart. It's surface-level knowledge. This well does not go deep. Surface-level knowledge is not intelligence. When one dedicates their life to one thing, that is intelligence. That's fucking art. I'm sweating so much right now. It's so goddamn hot in this room. I can barely breathe. Damn. So, I want to reiterate something before I continue talking about any natural disaster. I did not mean any disrespect to anybody listening. I know there's been a lot of stuff going on around the world lately, and quite honestly, I just thought maybe in some way I could, I don't know, assist for those who haven't been through shit but might end up going through it. They'll probably listen to this and go, why the hell would I ever need this? And then guess what? It happens. It's always the least expected shit, you know? You never know when it's going to happen. It's good to have knowledge of, at the very least, something, right? There are some things that you got to learn. There are some things you got to learn just a little bit about, right? Here's a good example. You probably tie your shoes every morning, right? But if I had to ask you, how do you tie a Windsor knot? You probably don't know what the hell that is, right? You're not an expert at knot tying, but you know how to tie your shoes. That's enough. That's all you need. You don't have to attempt to learn everything in the world, because doing so would drive you mad. I think it's a passage from Hindu scripture, if I remember correctly. It is important to pursue knowledge. Just don't get lost in the pursuit. The reason I brought up natural disasters is, quite honestly, the tsunami. You know, so a tsunami was on everyone's radar, at least a little bit this week, when everyone around here thought we're about to get hit with something. But at the same time, I feel like, sadly, it was kind of a selfish view of the world, right? Because we're thinking, oh god, we're about to get hit with a tsunami, take cover, and nothing happened. Or at the very least, some waves did come in, and it did rise a little bit, but it wasn't that bad. It wasn't as bad as people thought. So after that, everyone just kind of brushed it off. They're like, yeah, okay, all right, nothing happened. What about in fucking Russia when one of the worst earthquakes ever happened? As, you know, like that's what caused the tsunami in the first place. How do people ignore that? That's not a small thing, right? That's one of the biggest fucking surface level earthquakes that's ever hit Earth. And yet here we are, just going, well, nothing happened to us. There's a level of, I don't know, there's a heavy stoicism there, right? Where it's like, well, I can't really control what's going on over there, so I'll worry about myself, you know? But in a way, it's kind of selfish. But I get it. What the hell can you do, you know? I've started to finally develop that part of my brain where it's like, I could worry about other stuff, but if it doesn't affect me directly, what will worrying do, right? I don't know. One of those food for thoughts, right? Where it's like, okay, what the hell am I supposed to worry about someone over here dealing with their own stuff when I'm over here trying to survive, you know? Likewise, do you think some random peasant in a field is going to be like, oh god, I hope Love Island is on tonight? No, they don't give a fuck. They're over there trying to survive. They're focused on them, you know? They're focused on feeding their families, feeding themselves, keeping their livestock alive. I have this whole image in my head. Right? Call back to earlier. Anyway, I don't know. It's been a fucking wild year, right? Like, fucking wild year. Every year seems to be going faster. I don't like that. This has been a long week for me. And I'm being honest when I say that. It's been a long week. It's been one of those days, one of those weeks, one of those months where life's not kicking my ass per se, but it's definitely giving me a black eye. It's hurting my eyes in general. Listen, the Patreon is closed. We are closing the Patreon. There's not a lot of people that contribute, right? There's not enough people that are just like, I don't know, something about it is just, it's kind of sad, you know? It's fucking sad. For me specifically, it's sad because I'm like, damn, we really had momentum, and then it slowed down, crashing to a burning halt. It's not as good as it used to be, the podcast. I'm not thinking of quitting, but YouTube has been getting higher. YouTube has been getting more of my attention because people comment, you know, people watch, people like the videos. And it's not something I'm ignoring. It's like, yeah, I could see it and I feel great about it. The podcast is still going to keep going just because I feel like it's become my own personal diary. That's something that, I don't know, maybe one day I can go back and listen to stuff from like, I don't know, 5 or 10 years ago, you know? That'd be cool. I'd like that. In a way, this entire podcast is one thing. And I think you're finally getting it, right? People listening, I think you're finally getting that this is basically an experiment. A long, long-running experiment. So the Patreon's being closed. It's official now, right? Like, I loved having it, but ultimately what I notice about the Patreon is that there's just not much to it, you know? The problem is there's already these YouTube videos I have up thanking patrons. And it's like, I can't. I can't be doing that no more. What the fuck am I thanking you for? You haven't paid anything. I don't know. You showed support. That's it. I'm being real right now. You know what I mean? It's hard to do that in this podcast sometimes. I gotta be real. Oh my god. My girl's cooking something. It smells fucking incredible, dude. It smells like onions? What is that? I don't know. It's something. Anyway, it's gonna do it for this episode of the Meatweed Podcast. I'm sorry I got a little dramatic at the end there, but a lot's been going on behind the scenes and it's taking a toll on me. Like, I'm okay emotionally, I'm okay financially, I'm okay physically, but like, I feel like my outlook on life has is developing, you know. I'm getting older. I found my first gray hair the other day and it struck me, you know. I pulled it out and guess what? It grew back. So I thought, oh, I thought it was just that one hair. But no, they're getting there. They're turning gray. I'm turning gray. I am graying. I am not unk. I am gramp. What the fuck does that mean? I don't know. I haven't painted something in a while. I feel like, okay, something did get to me and I feel bad venting on the podcast. It kind of hurt. I did this episode, this video on YouTube where I painted on camera, right? No one gave a fuck. Like, I even said at the end of the video, I'm like, this is kind of awkward for me. I'm putting my heart on my sleeve, and everyone's like, well, fucking keep it in there. I don't know.
Bless you, honey.
It was embarrassing for me, but at the same time, I think, fuck it. I needed to hear that truth bomb. Besides, it has been a while, right? I actually have another canvas that I'm working on now. I just started, I gessoed the canvas, right? And I'm working on the background. But I need shades of green. I can't fucking find anywhere, dude. My nose is clogging because of how fucking humid it is in here. I never thought I'd say that. Oh my god. I'm thirsty. Okay, how do I describe what I'm going through right now? In this room, in this podcast, I've never had it groggy, I guess is the word. Or I don't know what the fuck the word would be. I feel like I'm melting into my chair because it's humid. There's a fan on, but it's not doing anything. My AC is fucked completely. Like, it's not on, right? We had a guy come out and he showed us the bill. And like, yeah, we paid it. Because what fucking choice do we have? We're in California. It's going to be 109 tomorrow. Okay? What choice do I have, man? And the best part is he looked around to be sure. He's like, hey, everything else is actually running pretty damn good except for this one component. And then he took it out, right? Here's where we found out that the previous owners might have been a little cheap. He put it on the ground and he said, wait, this is a knockoff of a knockoff. Like, I was like, what the hell? I didn't know you can get Chinese knockoffs of like official electronic goods. Like an HVAC part. Like who the fuck thinks of that, right? That's fucking so specific. So we're sitting on the grass looking at this piece going, like, it sounds like a meme, but he started reading it in Chinese. And I was like, wait, how did you read that? And I turned my head over upside down. It's written in plain English. But I don't know. It's just, I never think of Chinese bootlegs being in like official, like, structural electronics, you know, like that sounds dangerous. And now I'm a little paranoid thinking, what else did they cheap out on? oh shit, now I gotta check every single fucking outlet in this house, every electronic, everything that's mildly expensive, and I'm worried, you know? Fuck, living in a fire hazard. I need some fucking water, I need juice and a nap. I need a kale on forehead. I'm sweating so fucking much. I haven't been in this state for years, right? I think like 4 years ago I recorded a podcast episode where I'm like melting in my fucking seat. I finally feel like that again, and it's been a while, and I'm getting nostalgic. I have a podcast Patreon to delete. See you guys.